Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to part two of the Jurassic Coast Diaries, aka Roll the Roost podcast reaction pods, whilst I'm on holiday in Dorset. Didn't get one out yesterday, obviously. I've saved it until today because I'd just done a particularly... I'd done like the longest walk of the holidays when we always build up. Do it in the middle of the week, sort of. Good weather yesterday. If anybody knows the area, Charmouth to Seatown and back, going over Golden Cap. And that'll probably be lost on most of you, but it's a decent walk, it's sizeable. Nice sort of 11 miler, decent. And I was just knackered. I was barely keeping my eyes open during the game itself. So there you have it, here you have me today. If anyone is coming, I mean anyone UK or internationally is looking for a holiday, Dorset is a lovely place. I'd definitely say even like international people, you know, a lot of people just come over, go to London, really, which is great. It's cool. It's awesome city, major world city. But if you want to see sort of a different sort of part of the UK, somewhere like Dorset's pretty nice, you know, it's decent. They are a bit weird, though. That's the only thing I would say. No offence to any people from Dorset who are listening. Just, you know, it's a fairly insular community. But they're not as weird as the Cornish, who are very insular. But maybe I should talk about Tottenham Hotspur and not just about Dorset and hiking. It was... Look, okay, right, up front, my main point is, don't think we were that bad. Think we were all right. Annoying to lose, but I feel like we were in control for the majority of the game. We were lacking that one final kind of creative pass, or should we say creative flourish prior to the final pass. The Modric pass, if you like. As is often the case with Tottenham. Under Antonio Conte, at least. And basically since we sold Christian Eriksen. So that was that. But the game was decent. I thought we created a few chances, but not really. I mean, this is what I'm saying. We didn't create any real kind of clear-cut chances. And probably, I don't know, a draw would have been a fair result, I reckon. And it's just, yeah, it's quite annoying that we didn't manage to get one back. I thought, with our kind of pressure, especially towards the kind of final whistle, that sort of 70 minutes onwards, I thought we were really, really kind of putting on the pressure. And what with Milan's noted appalling defence, it's quite annoying that we didn't manage to get that one. But don't want to take anything for granted, but I do feel like we'll get them at White Hart Lane. It's got that kind of feel about it. What is kind of disappointing about the whole thing is that, and it's not fair to compare, it's not fair to contrast, we were in a different place as a football club back then. But when I think back to playing AC Milan under Harry Redknapp, that great adventure, Sandro, Palacios, sort of imperious in the midfield. Worth noting that Skip and Sol are actually fucking brilliant, so maybe that's not a fair comparison. But, you know, Aaron Lennon's breakaway, Peter Crouch slotting it home, and we just kind of thwarted one of the giants of European football, of history, you know. I believe, yeah, they're still above Liverpool, aren't they? They've won it the second most times after Real Madrid. I think they've won it seven times, seven or eight. They've fallen from grace a bit. Well, I mean, to say the least, they've fallen from grace a lot over the past few years. It's funny to sort of think of one of the teams that I grew up with watching winning. I think I've seen them win two Champions Leagues in my lifetime and just be home to some of the greatest footballers I've ever seen play the game. You know, seeing them kind of what they are now, and it's fitting that they sort of play in that, in the San Siro as well, that kind of mecca of football, that once kind of proud just spaceship of a stadium that was so far ahead of its time, to now just be crumbling. I've seen a lot, you know, I've seen Spurs fans like Kat from the Trust talking about there being no lights in the toilet and just a hole in the ground, which is fairly commonplace in quite a few places in Europe, but at a major kind of footballing club stadium does seem a bit bizarre. But it's fallen to pieces. It's going to get knocked down. I hope anybody who did get out there did just kind of enjoy it anyway for what it is, being able to, you know, be at the San Siro, a kind of modern day Italian Colosseum, a Roman Colosseum in Milan. Yes, I know, but I'm sure the Romans pratted about in Milan as well, didn't they? Maybe. Basically, it felt like it wasn't as exciting as it should be, and it's partly their fall from it, but I also just think it's kind of where we're at, right? It's so funny to have gone from the Manchester City game, Kane breaking the record, the fanfare around that, the kind of good feelings, the happy feelings, to be just thrown straight back into this kind of clogging mire of just whatever it is that we've seen for most of this season. Is it Conte's fault? Is it not? I choose to think it mostly does rest on him, to be honest, but maybe that's my agenda, as people say. There's just a certain things I find very bizarre now. I'm starting to find, you know, we've spent, what, 45 mil on Porro. Emerson Royal was very, very good, right? He was very good yesterday. But we spent 45 mil on Porro at the manager's behest. And now we're being told that, oh, well, he's not in game. He's not for use in games when we need to be defensive. He's kind of more that we're going to use him in games when we want to lead from the front foot, which is never really under Conte. So it begs this question that, so we're actively now buying players, we're spending a lot of money on the footballers for all the he's not backed stuff. £45 million is a lot of money on a wing back for any club, you know, for anyone, for any of them. We're already aware of the fact that he's got flaws to his game, and yes, I know every player has flaws and such, but you know, we've all gone through this fucking circus or January of trying to bring him in, and now we're doing the same old kind of put him in a bit, take him out, put him in a bit, take him out. Is he actually that good? Or I don't know, really, because he's got these flaws in his games. And you know, Richarlison, again, another sign of Conte not being backed. What, £62-65 million in the summer? Brazil's number nine, just rotting on the bench. You see how buzzing he was before the game? He's posting all the stuff from the San Siro, the selfies, how excited he was. He's just sat on the bench, just there until, what, 70th minute or something like that? Looked fairly decent when he came on, I thought. I don't really get what he's doing, what he's trying to achieve. It's sort of a weird one from the club with Porro, I think, trying to appease a manager that, again, as I continue to sort of complain about, shows no long-term commitment to the club. Maybe that was us doubling down, I guess. Trying to show him, look, if you stay, this is what we'll give you. Okay, I'll give the club that. I understand that. But I don't know. It's a strange one. Richarlison bothers me because I'm of the I'm in the camp of people that think he is going to be really good, and I think he's already really good. I think that, you know, I think he's could well be Kane's successor. That's not me saying he's going to score as many goals as Harry Kane. Nobody's going to do that. I'm not saying that for a second. But could he lead the attack for us? Be our kind of main man, that focal point? Different kind of physical set of attributes to Harry Kane. Probably a bit more dynamic. Can maybe press. We can, you know, press from the front as people are kind of clamouring for this modern style of football. So I'm told. Richarlison could be that guy, right? But the way things are going right now, it's already looking like he's that player that ends up on loan at somewhere like AC Milan, ironically, you know? Because nobody outside of the Premier League can fucking buy footballers anymore. So we're not gonna be able to sell Richarlison for anywhere close to what we've paid for him. He's basically had a season of just getting out of kind of match sharpness, even though he's shown in the World Cup what an asset he can be. It just all feels a bit bizarre. Jed Spence, we all know what's gone on there. Well, we don't know what's gone on there, but we can see the sort of bizarre goings on that have led to him now being on loan and doing quite well, yes, although in Ligue 1, so you know. We don't need to talk about Jed Spence. It's just annoying. The Leicester game, kind of, you know, get over him. Like I say, I think there's every chance we are going to go through. I just want to feel like, personally, I want to feel that I'm enjoying it. I'm excited about watching Tottenham play. And that doesn't mean winning every week, but it means we're kind of bought into a manager. We're bought into a bigger picture. And still, my consistent complaint with Antonio Conte is that I don't see what that big picture is, and he isn't selling us that big picture. All that he's selling us is a guy who seems pretty unhappy in the job that he's in. Yes, I understand the context is he may be pretty unhappy just in general with the things going on in his personal life. But I do still feel like it was this way before his bereavements and such. Just kind of, you know, can't we all just be out of our misery on this one a bit? Because I feel that there's a really, really good... The problem is, right, when this stuff happens, I see consistently the fallback is always, or the blowback is always, what's he supposed to do with this group of players? But to me, there's a really, really good group of players here. There's a core of a really good team here that I don't think is being utilised properly. He seems to be stuck with this system that doesn't serve the players that he has at his disposal. He's just stubborn with his substitutions. He doesn't seem to be warming to the new players that he signs. It's just hard to see what the sort of point of all this is. And as I was saying, you know, it's worth remembering, as I was saying in the last time, that we are in the latter stages of the Champions League. We are still doing all right in the Premier League. It doesn't feel particularly fun, does it? That's the problem, right? You want to enjoy football. You know, I'm not just here for the kind of mathematical side of this stuff. We're in this position in the league and this is better than our average positions of... I don't really care, you know? We had fun under Redknapp. We had fun under Pochettino. We had fun under Martin Jol. We didn't, maybe in the latter stages of Pochettino's career, we were semi-expectant of getting something big across the line. But for all of them, probably in parts of Redknapp as well. And that was in part down to the, you know, the sort of star value of Gareth Bale and Luka Modric, Rafa van der Vaart, Aaron Lennon, Sandro,
Ledley King.
But we had fun, though, you know, and it wasn't about what are we going to win. There wasn't this kind of expectancy, and maybe that's not going to go away until we do win something, because as we sort of talk about, it's been a long time since we have gotten something over the line, and it feels like people are just hungry for that. Is Conte the antidote to that? Is Conte the guy that gets us the FA Cup this year, parts ways in summer, and we've had that kind of thirst sated, and it means that whoever does come in next, if they say, I need 5 years to, or 3 years to get this team in line with the 5-year roadmap I have, will having that bit of silverware just kind of appease people a bit? Maybe. It might do. Maybe that's what Conte's purpose is, and maybe that's what the club are thinking. But I don't think any of us, maybe younger people who probably are too young to even be listening to this, who have grown up with Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Heung-min Son, Christian Eriksen, all the lads. Maybe they have followed Spurs because of an expectancy of them being a sort of top team forever, but the majority of us don't support a kind of a Chelsea, a City, a team that's gone out and bought loads of success. And we don't support one of those establishment clubs like Liverpool, United, them down the road, that win everything, that manage to just get it across the line all the time because that's just what they do. You know, we're the plucky underdogs. We're the ones that can, you know, get a result on the day and have a cup romance. We're here for the narrative. We're here for the journey. It's the club that we are. It is what we are. You know, we know that. And so I find this kind of like thirst for, I just want to win, kind of weird, because it's not something I've ever really known about the club and who we are. But in saying that, like I say, I have always known Tottenham to be winning stuff. So maybe we do just need to get that FA Cup or something over the line. But is that going to happen this year? I still maintain that it could do, you know, it could do. It's just hard in the shadow of a game like last night, where it just seemed to be all the best bits of Antonio Conte, which is just kind of dull, dour football that just seems like a kind of, once again, act of form over function. That's all I can really say about it. It just feels like it's, you know, pushing a piano up the stairs. Just let him play a bit, you know, let him loose. I don't know, whatever's going on, it doesn't feel like it's a particularly healthy situation anymore. Alistair Gold, whether it's the club briefing against Conte, or if it's, you know, whatever, if it is legitimate sources, who knows, a disgruntled under 21 parent, as I've seen somebody say, I think it was Windy say, there's been sort of stuff coming out about his training practices, cancelling holidays, just being quite, you know, bipolar in his approach to things. And maybe again, this is the whole kind of what an elite manager does, this stuff that we always hear about. Who knows? Surprisingly, I've never played for an elite Premier League football club, so I don't generally know what is the common occurrence of managers to do. But it does feel a bit weird, doesn't it? From the outside to the layman, it sounds like a bit of a weird situation. Using the under-21s in training, which is good on one hand, but then meaning that they don't get their own training or something. I think it's more about, it's not about the principle of using under-21s in training, because even from my perspective, I understand that that's always been a thing. You know, using under-21s to plug holes in a squad in training, and in turn that gives them a lot of kind of, you know, exposure to first-team football, to a higher level of football, higher intensity. It sounds more like it's the way in which it's being done maybe if it's kind of late notice or not done in a very organised fashion. It just sounds like a lot of things at Tottenham are very up in the air, and I think ultimately that bleeds through to the match day. When we see the way the teams play, we see the way it all goes. Just seems a bit all over the shop. That's the only way I could put it. It's just not that fun. I don't feel like anyone's having fun. Joe Barton, who we've had on the pod, he did a tweet, it was very funny, a while ago, just saying, like, you know, the Spurs social media team keep putting out videos saying, lads are buzzing about the place, we go again, all smiles in training, accompanied by a video of players looking like they've just been told that all of their dogs have died. And it's so true. And Billy T found an example of it this week, of them all getting on the plane and they just all look so sullen. And again, we can't read too much into this stuff. You know, we're going a bit Jan Vertonghen leaning against the wall at Anfield gate on this, but it doesn't seem or feel like a particularly happy place at Spurs at the moment. And I feel that, you know, we're all feeling that to a certain degree, right? It don't feel great. But we're in the Champions League, so let's just enjoy that while we can. Let's do the players.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fraser Forster, he sort of did that weird parry for the goal for them, but that's probably being a bit harsh. Other than that, I thought he was pretty decent, pretty solid. You know, I haven't even watched the highlights of Leicester. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I'm on holiday. I'm enjoying being out in Mother Nature, doing my walks, all that sort of thing. I don't need to take myself to that place. Apparently he was a bit awful, basically, was my point. In the Leicester game, but I thought he was all right against Milan. I think a big plus for him, two big pluses for him, his distribution with his feet and just in general is far superior to Lloris's. It's no secret that Lloris's has always been woeful, what the fuck he does to justify his salary. Don't know if you heard a massive sneeze in the background, that's my mum who has just the most unbelievably loud sneezes on the face of the planet. So come at me with any of your relatives if you say that they've got a louder one, because they don't. I'll measure the decibels at some point and we can pit them off. But you probably heard that in the background there, so I just thought I'd supply that context. Fraser Forster, decent though. I like the way he claims balls in the air. Massive bloke, hands like a frying pan. The best backup we've had in years? Yep, I would say so. Christian Romero. I don't know what somebody's put in his Mate Gourde, but was not good at all yesterday, I thought. I don't even put that on a kind of, oh, look how he's playing alongside. I think individually he was pretty horrible. He got done by that Theo Hernandez Gorm several times. Was not having a good time of it. Lashed out, got a stupid yellow. That was for all the kind of like the talk of like him being smart, him kind of putting Haaland in his place, leaving a mark on him and taking out Grealish, look at the team. I thought his yellow last night was just a stupid rash, just got angry. Change could have even been a red, so
you know, not wasn't impressed with him last night at all. He's a funny one. I do feel like, yeah, he is young. I think he is a brilliant defender, and I do think, for everything I just said a second ago, I do think we'll see the best of him when he does have a better partner alongside him. One thing I've noticed, the weird thing about him is, for, like, you know, for big athletic bloke, he's pretty shit in the air as well, I've got to say. That's just a side note, but fine. Eric Dyer, all right, pretty Times New Roman performance from him. Didn't think it was any particularly bad, but, you know, that kind of that pressing in the midfield that we saw him do against City, that kind of more dynamic, adventurous side to him, has fully gone back in its box, hasn't it, after Leicester. And maybe that's Conte. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it was a Stellini Mason quirk that they thought, okay, we'll try and get away with this while the boss is on his sort of sick bed. Don't know, whatever. Great squad player, Eric Dyer. Happy to have him about the place, but, you know, we know the drill. Clement Longley, I thought he was actually doing all right yesterday. I thought he advanced the ball pretty well a few times. He had that nice little moment when he kind of sent a couple of their players to the shops and managed to get the ball into the box, and then just kind of like fucked up the final ball. I thought there were a few different options. He could have sort of played it backwards. It's just, it was quite annoying, and that it just felt very Clement Longley. Flashes of kind of like good of promise, and then just like, oh, you know, like the old Roy Hodgson meme when he was England manager, sat on the bench. He's looking up, he's looking excited, he thinks something's going to happen, and then it's head down, it's gone. And that just feels like Clement Longley, really, to me. But he was probably the best of the three of them, I thought, last night, of the centre-backs. He did have a sort of, I did feel that he had a calming presence on the defence. Like I say, I thought he carried the ball forwards well several times. I thought his passing was all right. It's just what it is, isn't it? Emerson Royale, you know, it's lit as much as I'm moaning about as not playing Porro, it's lit a fire under him. He's been brilliant since we brought Porro in. I thought he was great again yesterday. He had that again, there was one moment in particular I've highlighted that I just thought, fucking yes, lad. When he was basically getting fouled. Getting fouled on the side, I think it was by Hernandez, and he just fought him off. I think he was even on the floor at one point, and then carried on with the ball, carried it forwards, and played in just a brilliant instinct when he didn't have time to think about it. Just an instinctive first time deep lying cross along the ground into Sonny. I think it was to Son, or it might have been to Kane. I can't remember. But it was a brilliant ball in, and yeah, nothing really came of it from that point, but it was, you know, it was just some good defensive work on the other side of it from Milan. But just that kind of that spirit, that kind of fight in him, the more sort of focus switched on side of it, not just this kind of fucking about, no-look passes, playing kind of slack balls, not really concentrating. It really feels like he's kind of actually now like, fuck, I need to save my career here. Because I do think he likes, you know, I think he likes London. I think he likes the club. I think he's happy to be at Tottenham. And maybe, as we all do, maybe he's just kind of taking that for granted a bit because of that lack of real competition for him. And now it's here, maybe we're going to see the best of him. Who knows? I mean, it's a weird one though, isn't it? I'm going to put Skip and Sarr in together because they were one of the biggest anxieties for a lot of people going into this game. And as Sean Walsh said, 90 Min's Sean Walsh, he said, to think we were all worried about Skip and Sarr when it was actually the other nine blokes we should have been afraid of. It feels very true. I mean, Papa Matasar, we've kind of joked about this at first, but, and there is always this kind of trepidation with a young player, we don't want to put too much pressure on them and all that type of stuff, but he feels like a legitimately wonderful young player, right? He looks like he has everything going for him to be a magnificent footballer, like a truly, truly brilliant player. To have that level of composure, to have that much presence, in the centre of midfield in the on your Champions League debut, considering you don't play week in, week out for Tottenham either, was just astounding. And I don't want to be too pessimistic about Bentancur. I really don't. But I just cannot escape from that awful feeling that players are never, ever the same when they come back from an ACL. It's gutting. It's horrible. And that's something I haven't spoken about at the start. And that probably adds to this kind of cloud over Tottenham at the moment. Because I really feel gutted about that with Bentancur, because I felt like we were sort of seeing the beginnings of what was going to be an exceptional career for a talented, brilliant footballer. And whether that's going to be nipped in the bud a bit now, who knows? It would be sad if that is the case. I just don't really ever recall players coming back from an ACL and being the same, especially not in a kind of high pressure position that he occupies, that, you know, relies on his athleticism, his kind of strength, his kind of ballsiness. But Mpabbe Matasar, big shoes to fill, but he filled them last night. He looked majestic, and I feel that him and Skip really complement one another really, really well. I think they both seem to be, I mean, they, for a start, they both seem to be wired the same way. They're both tenacious, and they're both young players that don't give a fuck that they're young. They don't seem to be overwhelmed by the occasion. They both seem to be from that kind of, you know, school of players that just know they're a player. They know they are, and they're not arrogant about it. I mean, they might be, I don't really know them as people, but they don't come across that way. They're not trying to be cocky. They just stick to the fundamentals of their game and do them really, really well. And I thought the pair of them were absolutely brilliant. And it's a shame, because Højbjerg is going to come in and break that partnership up in the next game, you'd imagine. Imagine it was Saar and Højbjerg. Skip and Højbjerg seem to be the interchangeable ones, but yeah, it is a shame, because I like Skip, and I like Saar, and I like them together. It feels like a kind of midfield partnership that we could and should be building around. Maybe have Højbjerg in there as well with the two of them, but that's not going to happen, is it, because of system. But I think there's much to be excited about, and I think they, you know, they did themselves proud last night, and it's good to see. That's you know, that's what football's all about. I've spoken about this before, but one of the most exciting things about football is seeing a young player come in and just hit the ground running and develop in your shirt and become one of your main players. And I definitely think in Saar we have a player that is capable of that. Skip too, I hope, but I don't know if, you know, fate will allow that one to happen or not. I'm not so sure. Because it feels like he's now getting to an age and a position where he needs to be playing if we're going to see him develop into the player that he potentially can be. Saar, I think, is fantastic, though. Even Perisic, look, I don't want to get too negative about this, but he is starting to wind me up. I'm really very much going off of him. Age is catching up with him. I don't think him and Son play well down that side together, but either way, just doesn't do it for me. It's not the one. Got no other option but to do it, but I just can't wait for Udogie to come back. That's basically what I can say about that.
Dejan Kulusevski,
not been quite the same since his injury, has he? I don't think there's much to worry about. Hopefully there isn't, because You know, he's somebody that I was saying just a few weeks ago that we should be building the fucking future around. But he is young, you know. It's just a shame, isn't it? It's just frustrating. It's there has been a lot of, you know, people anecdotally always moan about our medical team, our medical staff on Twitter, saying, oh, you know, we get all these injuries. I think a lot of clubs get a lot of injuries, right? But Kulusevski was absolutely flying. You know, he was one of the main reasons that we got the Champions League tail end of last season. He took everybody by surprise. And it's strange to see him sort of disappearing back into a bit of a shell again. I say a shell again, as in that seems to be where he was at when he was in Juventus. I don't think there's any need to panic about any of this yet. He should be fine. But he just isn't himself right now. And it's obviously not of benefit to the team whatsoever. Heung-min Son. It's a funny one, man. You know, because it's one of those performances where I'm not really sure whether I could say he had a good game or a bad game, you know? And I think a lot of this comes down to, I'm not sure what it is that he's actually being asked to do, really, under Conte. I just don't really get it, and I don't think he really gets it. I don't think him and Perisic work well together. I think one of the things that's encouraging that I saw him do a few times last night that was sorely missing from his game, definitely post-World Cup, even pre-World Cup, his ability to sort of travel with the ball, to run that kind of explosive, tight dribbling that he has, seems to be coming back. He seems to have found his touch again, which is good. It's promising. So there are promising signs there, but again, it just seems... Again, it seems to be all part of this kind of confusion that lingers around the whole team about what it is that we're doing, what we're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to be watching. I don't know. It's just not there at the moment. But I didn't think Son would... I thought Son looked better than he has done for quite a while, but he still wasn't Son of old, you know? I guess that's the best way I can put it. Harry Kane, I think he tried his best, but there weren't really... You know, it was quite a game for him. It was quiet, wasn't it? Didn't get much service. He was pretty strangled at the top. He dropped back a bit. I think he did that thing where he started to get frustrated, so dropped back and tried to start sort of spraying balls about the place. One thing I did notice, actually, I think him and Skip actually had a few decent little interchanges. I think they kind of were on a similar wavelength. They worked well together. But nothing really came of it. Like I say, I think he kept playing like the ball to Kulusevski, and Kulusevski just couldn't quite get with the rhythm of the game. It wasn't quite happening for him. And he had that one... Kane had that one... awful attempt at an overhead bicycle kick, which, you know, less said about that, the better. But yeah, not much to report. He had that one goal, that one sort of shout for a goal that didn't go over the line, did it? And Son was offside anyway, but quite a night for the big man, and it's, you know, it's a funny one. Because you see, nights like breaking the record at White Hart Lane, you think, maybe he does love the club. You know, maybe he will sign that new contract. Maybe he will just spend his whole career here. And then I do wonder if, like, the Leicester game, and then nights like last night when he just can't quite get that service, he's trying to take it all on his shoulders. And I wonder if that is that reality check for him where he is like, nah, I need to get out of here. Which, God, I don't want to end on this note, but I just can't see him signing that new contract. I just can't see it. I can't see why he would do it. And I know we want to kind of protect ourselves and comfort ourselves with this idea that he will because he wants to be a legend for us and all this type of stuff. But he already is that. He's the club record goal scorer. It's almost in a way like he can put that bit to bed now. You know, I've shown people what I can do in the modern era at Tottenham. Now I just want to go and get my hands on a Premier League trophy. And I say it again, I think United is probably, they're sniffing around. But I remain consistent on this point. And I say again, I don't think we've heard the last of Manchester City and Harry Kane as a talked about prospect. Haaland doesn't sort of settle too well. Pep has always loved Harry Kane. And I think Pep is rattled. I think Pep is so rattled by the fact, you know, the way he keeps going on about Daniel Levy. He's so rattled by the fact that we wouldn't just give him Harry Kane, that jewel in his crown, that thing he coveted. Kane ain't going to demand a lot of money from Manchester City. He just wouldn't. He's not going to be difficult about it. They know they're going to have a player who will just work his ass off, who can score them goals. Like, he's going to be scoring goals till he's 36. Who can fulfill other roles, who can be a leader in the team. I just think there's a lot there that makes sense, and I still think he will end up at City. But yeah, you know, I don't want to end it on a sour note, but I just sort of have done that, haven't I? I think with Richarlison there, I just hope we can sort of hold on to him, and whoever the new manager is in summer can just make him feel valued, make him feel special and important, and let him know that we're going to sort of build part of the team, or not build the team around him, but let him know that he's very much front and centre of their thinking for the future of the club. Should Kane say that he's going to go, that is, obviously. And things can be alright. Because, like I said, I do think the thing is, it does feel like there's a bit of a cloud over stuff at the moment. And really, ultimately, I'm sorry to say, guys, but I think that cloud is Antonio Conte. And I think once he's gone, I'm just going to be more open about this stuff now, you know. Because I don't think all fault lies with him. And it's not to say that I don't think there are some games that... Well, I don't really think there are many games in which I think it's good to have him here. I don't think he's all bad. I don't think, you know, I think he ends up at Madrid or PSG or whatever and does very well, probably back at Juventus. And that's fine. That's great. But it just ain't happening here. He's a cloud over everything, I think. And I think once he is gone, we're going to see, you know, we've got a right-hand side, Spence, Porro, Emerson, left-hand side of Udogi, whoever else we bring in, because we do need to bring someone else in on that side. We get a new centre-back in, we get a goalkeeper. I mean, I'm starting to reel off a big shopping list here of players that we don't have. But the players that we do have, players like Sarr, hopefully if Bentancur comes back to be any sort of serviceable player, Kulusevski, Richarlison, Romero. I feel a bit like that dog in the burning house with a teacup at the moment. Look, I think there's every chance we can still have a decent future. We just need something to believe in. We need a plan. We need a roadmap. We need, yeah, basically something to rally behind, something to believe in, as I said. And Conte ain't going to give us that. He hasn't given us that. Hasn't given us that. And he isn't going to give us that. It's time to say goodbye. Thanks everyone who does support the show. You can continue to do so on the Buy Me A Coffee website. Link in the bio on the Twitter header. Please do like, please do share, all those sort of things. I've got abysmal internet where I am, and I'm also, you know, on holiday with my entire family, so
it's easier for me to nip off first thing in the morning when people are all doing breakfast and stuff. But to be honest, doing the sort of the studio pod and all that with somebody else, I can't do it at the moment. I'm on holiday, so is what it is. But I'll be back next week at it properly. Gavin, you Spurs.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.